Welcome in, everyone, to the 70th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty podcast. As always, I am your host, Colin Winship, and for the second week in a row, it is just me. Don't have my co-host Toby with me, but we are going to continue a ranking series. We started last week with quarterbacks. I know the standard progression would be to go to wide receivers and running backs next, but I thought might as well have Toby for those episodes. So instead, we're going to go with the tight ends this week. I'm going to plan to move through the players a little bit quicker than I did last week. This week, I just think as a solo podcast, you want to just keep the ball rolling, and I don't want to get stuck up too much on any players that we kind of already know where they're at. There isn't a lot of discussion there, so that's basically how I see this series going forward. I want us to move along quickly, especially as we get into wide receivers and running backs when there's just so many players to talk about. Before we get into it, though, of course, I have to remind you guys to follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. I am posting there all the time, interacting with a lot of you guys in my DMs, and I really enjoy that aspect of doing this, so definitely hit me up over there. Just send whatever questions you've got at any time, and I'm super happy to answer them. Beyond that, I just want to dive right into this. We've got 40 players we're going to talk through here today, and I'll discuss throughout where the different tier breaks are as well. The top player on my board for Dynasty, not necessarily for Redraft, is still George Kittle, actually. So George Kittle, and might as well get it over with right off the start, Travis Kelce is my number two. And I think comparing these guys is the most interesting thing to talk about. And the reason why I still have George Kittle as my number one, as I did last offseason, is because even though he does not have the sustained production that Travis Kelce has, he is still 4 years younger. And that is the main thing that pushes him above Kelce for me. Kelce, I do think, is the one who's slightly more locked into targets, but realistically, I think these players would be viewed a lot more similarly in redraft leagues if it weren't for that injury. I think basically Kittle's injury woes are the only thing that have really been pushing him down the board further and further. When I'm in redraft leagues, I am absolutely taking the value of Kittle in the third round way before I'm going to be taking Kelce with my first round pick. But these are both locked in guys. Whenever Kittle's on the field, he does get a crazy target share, very similar to the same way that Travis Kelce does. It may not be as prolific of an offense, but comparing the two of them, Kelce has absolutely been the picture of health, and so has Mahomes. Whereas on the other side of it, I don't think there's been anyone as unlucky as the 49ers. Like, Kittle not only has dealt with injuries himself, but players around him, even down to like their O-line gets hurt all the time, their quarterbacks that have been throwing to him. He had multiple injuries last year, and he had a variety of unideal quarterbacks throwing him the ball. I think whether you have Jimmy Garoppolo or the upside of Trey Lance going forward, there is just enough upside there to make me put George Kittle first and Travis Kelce second, because I think they'll produce similarly, and then of course you just have extra years on top of that. And then the third guy, as I think most people still have, unless you have Kyle Pitts sneaking up there, is Darren Waller. And Darren Waller, actually, ADP has him going as fourth off the board after Kyle Pitts. So yes, that Kyle Pitts hype is going strong. Darren Waller is 28 years old, so he's 1 year older than Kittle, 3 years younger than Travis Kelce. And the difference between him and those other two is Waller really doesn't have the reps that those other guys do. And that can be seen as a good thing in terms of longevity of his career. Waller is much more of that receiver. Like, he can block, he definitely does, but he's no Kittle. Him and Kelce are more alike in the fact that they're mainly used as a receiver. And the thing about Darren Waller is he is just an elite athlete. I do think he's benefited so far since his emergence from the lack of target competition around him. And that's something that I do think is likely to change as the years go on in the next few. I don't think you can bank on the fact that the Raiders will continue to have none of these wide receivers hit, and so Waller will be the obvious de facto number one. But I'm still going to take him over some of the younger guys below him, because I think he's such an elite asset in the receiving game that he will continue to demand so many targets, and the risk that comes along with any young player that they don't hit to quite the degree that you expect they will. Waller's already hit. We already know what he is. He's an elite receiver, and I want to bank on the sure thing way at the top of my drafts. Kyle Pitts doesn't come up, actually. It is then TJ Hockenson for me at 4 with an ADP of 6. So he's actually not only going below Kyle Pitts, he's also going below Mark Andrews, as we'll talk about later. TJ Hockenson is 24 years old, obviously a high top 10 first round pick just a few years ago. And I think that we already saw the breakout last year. Obviously, it was sophomore season and he ended up as a top 5 tight end. So really, you can't be asking for too much more than that. But what I see with Hockenson in this offense this year is because of that target competition, the players around him right now, I just think he is going to eat so many targets. I would not be surprised to see him as the most targeted tight end in the league. I think he can jump into that top end tier, and I want to get Hockenson now because in comparison with those guys above him, he's got 3 or 4 years on Waller and Kittle. And then when you're comparing him with someone like Kyle Pitts, we've seen Hockenson at the NFL level. Of course, I don't expect Kyle Pitts to have a crazy amount of risk. He was the 4th overall pick. He's an incredible college prospect. But there have been so many other high-end tight ends that have not hit. Whereas with Hockenson, at this point, I've seen enough with him in the NFL that I'm confident he's going to get paid in a couple years. He's going to be one of these guys who's around the league for a really long time. And I think throughout that time, he can be a high-end fantasy producer. Then at 5, I finally have Kyle Pitts, and honestly, that probably means I'm not getting Kyle Pitts almost anywhere. If I didn't get him in my rookie draft, I'm not going to get him in startups right now. The ceiling of Kyle Pitts is unlike any other tight end we've ever seen come out of college. He very potentially is the best receiving tight end that has ever come into the NFL. He obviously is the highest drafted tight end in the history of the league. He's only 20 years old, so incredibly young. And the only reason I have him down at 5 is because the hit rate of tight ends is just quite low. And we do not know, even though he is a generational, revolutionary tight end, there is still that risk that people, I do not believe, are factoring into Kyle Pitts when they're drafting him right now, that he just might flame out. We see some other guys we'll see deep in this list. You've got your OJ Howards and Njoku's and players like this that they were first round picks. You know, even someone like Evan Engram, who can come out of the gate rookie season and absolutely light things up. Even then, transitioning to the NFL as a tight end is very difficult. And sure, I think that there is incredible target opportunity for Kyle Pitts in this offense in year one because he appears to be the number 2 target for Atlanta behind Calvin Ridley. I am incredibly excited for Kyle Pitts. Like, obviously, I still have him as a rookie, as a top 5 tight end. The ceiling is absolutely immense, but I don't find that I'm getting him right now because I just think there's more risk baked into, you know, where I have him than his current ADP all the way up at 3. Then there's Mark Andrews, who I have at 6 and ADP has at 5. He's 25 years old, and he's much more similar to Darren Waller in that the reason I have him below both Pitts and Hockenson is I actually think he's benefited a ton throughout his career so far on the Ravens with not having significant target competition. And even if, say, Rashad Bateman totally busts out and for the next couple years he doesn't have elite wide receivers around him, down the line, this is clearly an issue that the Ravens want to fix. They aren't going to be able to completely rely on the run game as Lamar ages, and they want to surround him with wide receivers. And I do think that will take away from the target share that Mark Andrews has seen so far in his career. Obviously, he's a great red zone weapon. I like him as a receiver a lot. I'm happy if he's my tight end one coming out of a startup draft, but I just don't have him quite as high as others. I'd rather take my shot on a guy like Hockenson because I think that we possibly have seen the best of what we can get out of Mark Andrews in 2019. And that's not even to mention the fears that people obviously have around Lamar Jackson as a passer. So I just think this combination of things makes me not quite as confident as others are in Mark Andrews. I would also say this is where a tier break exists for me. Sure, I'm not considering Mark Andrews and George Kittle interchangeable or anything. Like, obviously there is a hierarchy within that top tier, but these 6 guys are the ones that I'm really pumped to get out of a draft. There's a couple other guys that I'm excited about and are more prospective adds, but I would say most of the time, especially if we're talking about redraft, if I'm not getting one of these 6, then I'm waiting till very near the end of my draft, and I'll talk when I get to them about the guys that I'm targeting at that point. At number seven, though, I have Dallas Goedert. And Dallas Goedert, I think, is a really good tight end. The issue with Dallas Goedert is, of course, the continuation of the fact that he has Zach Ertz running on the other side of the line from him. And there was a lot of projection that Zach Ertz would leave. I would say at this point in the offseason, it definitely looks like he's sticking around. And we'll get into it more with Zach Ertz, but I don't think we can say with 100% confidence that Zach Ertz is washed. He's not necessarily the player we saw last year. That was obviously the worst year of his career, but I want to keep the potential open to the fact that he could continue to see the high amount of targets he got even last year because, you know, hopefully he would be doing a little something more than he did last year. Until Zach Ertz is gone from this offense, or I guess if he just completely busts out and becomes irrelevant, I think it's really hard to see the true emergence of Dallas Goedert, but he's talented enough and that day will come. So that's why he is all the way up at number seven for me. Noah Fant at eight is another guy I'm pretty excited to get because I think the upside is super high. The problem with the 2021 season is that first of all, obviously the quarterback situation is far from ideal, but beyond that, last year, in a year where he produced okay on a points per game basis, he also dealt with injuries, but he strongly benefited from the fact that Cortland Sutton was out the rest of last year after week one, and he clearly, to me, falls behind both Jeudy and Cortland Sutton in that target distribution, so it'll be tough for him to see enough targets to be like a breakout tight end this year. But we've talked about it a lot on the show, the fact that Cortland Sutton's contract is up if he were to leave, if they were to find a better, different quarterback, or maybe someone like Drew Lock absolutely levels up, then in a year, in 2 years, I think Noah Fant is talented enough. He is an insane athlete. He could easily explode and become one of those high-end top five tight ends. Mike Gesicki then comes in at nine, and Mike Gesicki is another guy who I think has benefited from the lack of target competition in previous years, so I'm not as hot on him. I would say, again, there's a tier break above him to me. I would go for Goddard and Fant quite a bit before I'd go for Mike Gesicki here. He is only 25, though. I have him ranked right where ADP has him at nine, and he is another great athlete. But like I said, I think the problem is that in previous years, he's just been the best or the second best guy in town. Like, clearly, Devontae Parker has benefited so much from being the clear guy. And now this offseason, they draft someone with incredibly high capital. They also bring in Will Fuller, who, sure, he might not be around for that long, but he's definitely going to hurt the amount of targets that someone like Mike Gesicki can command. So I'm just not quite as hot on him. And again, this is someone that I'm not ending up with that frequently. And that's largely because at 10, I have Tyler Higbee. Tyler Higbee is 28 years old. And going through these rankings, this was kind of a shock to me of realizing exactly how high I am on Tyler Higbee compared to consensus. Because his ADP right now is putting him at tight end 18 and I have him at 10. So it shouldn't be a surprise to me that I've ended up with him in a ton of drafts because I think you can get him at crazy good value. And the reason why I am targeting Higbee not only in Dynasty but especially in Redraft is because, first of all, obviously Gerald Everett is gone. And then the second big change of this year is that now he has Matt Stafford throwing him the ball. He is, I think, the clear third target on this team. Even a great receiver in Akers getting hurt probably benefits him a little bit, just moves him higher and higher up that target distribution chart. And I think this is an offense that's going to throw a ton, and he's going to be a very big beneficiary of that. Basically, he's one of these players that, no, I haven't been hot on him for years or anything. He hasn't always been my guy, but I look at how he's valued right now and how I project his 2021 season's gonna go, and I just think in a year from now, this spot of him being top 10 is gonna be consensus because he's going to have a good enough year that everyone will be hot on him going forward. So with the new quarterback, with slightly less target competition, I think that Higbee is poised to explode in 2021. At 11, I've got Jonnu Smith, and Jonnu Smith is basically pure athletic upside. He has always been that. He was on the Titans and now he's on the Patriots. I have him going a bit higher than his ADP at 16, and everything gets a little bit more murky now. Like, obviously none of these tight ends are clear guys who are locked in for a very high target share, but none of the wide receivers around Jonnu Smith have established themselves in really any way. Obviously you also have Hunter Henry, who I'll talk about in a second, and I think those guys potentially could be the top two targets on the team, as crazy as that is. They brought them in for good money. They are clearly going to be a focal point of the offense, and if I've got to pick between the two, I'm betting on the athleticism of Jonnu. At 12, I've actually got Robert Tonyan. Before we get to Hunter Henry, though, Robert Tonyan is locked into this offense that he produced like crazy in last year. He is 27 years old. I have him going right where ADP is at 12, and he's not going to perform in the same way he did last year. Like, his touchdown percentage was absolutely ridiculous. If you watch the games, there were just so many broken plays where he just ran for a 60-yard touchdown because somehow the defense never picked him up. And as much as I don't value someone like Randall Cobb that much, honestly, I do think someone like Randall Cobb, who clearly Aaron Rodgers wanted to bring in, could hurt the targets that Robert Tonyan see a little bit. So I'm still happy to have him, especially as one of those later guys you can take in redraft, but I just wouldn't be expecting what you saw in 2020. Now we're going to get to Hunter Henry, who's 26 years old, going actually above Jonnu Smith at tight end 11, and I have him here at tight end 13, so I guess I'm lower on the guy. He actually did just get an injury, so I would not be surprised at all if those two swap and Henry starts to drop a little bit, but his shoulder injury does not seem to be significant. He should be all good for the regular season. The reason why Hunter Henry's a little bit lower for me, and of course, they both have the chance of emerging, it's totally possible. I think Hunter Henry's a pretty skilled tight end, and if these two didn't end up on the same team, I'd probably be excited for both of them. But Hunter Henry isn't as strong of an athlete as Jonnu Smith, and I think he's also a bit of a better blocker, so I would not be surprised if he's used more in that role, and the tight end that I see running more routes in this offense is going to be Jonnu, so that's why I prioritize him, even though they're both decent shots to take. There's a good chance one, if not both, could emerge as a top 12 very usable tight end. The man who just got paid, Logan Thomas, is then at 14, and Logan Thomas is definitely very usable. I think he fits very well in this mix because we're definitely in this huge tier now of decent guys that I'm happy to have as my tight end two for sure. And he is the type of guy that it's totally fine if he's your tight end one. He will not do as well as he did last year, very similar to Robert Tonyan, because they brought in Curtis Samuel, but there is the possibility that Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in and completely levels up the whole offense, and that could benefit Logan Thomas. But the reason why Logan Thomas's dynasty value has gone up is because he was not viewed as a locked-in guy who was definitely going to be securing a high amount of targets for a long time, and this new three-year contract really does make a big difference in terms of how I value him in dynasty. I'm pretty excited about Logan Thomas, especially because, you know, I think he was my best call of all of last season. I hope that at least a couple of you have him off of waivers about a year ago now. From my suggestion there, he was one of my dynasty buys of the week. And even if he doesn't have the upside to be one of these elite guys, I think he's absolutely a very usable guy. He's going to see a strong enough target share that you can be confident putting him in your lineup. And that's why he's above some of these other prospective guys, is because, sure, he doesn't have the upside that maybe the next two or three guys we'll talk about have, but he definitely has a more locked-in target share. At 15, we're now going to go to Cole Kmet, who's someone who really impressed me in his rookie season, actually. I wasn't incredibly high on him last year coming into the NFL, but he seems to be the clear guy in Chicago. This is an offense that could easily level up, especially when they make that move to Justin Fields. And looking at the rest of his target competition, obviously you have Allen Robinson, but that might just be for 1 year. You've got Darnell Mooney, who has a chance to blow up, but he profiles as the type of guy who won't see a crazy high amount of targets, And then you probably have Cole Kmet. So he's definitely someone that is interesting, someone that I'm looking to go get, especially if I don't have to start him right away. If I have some other older guy, like if I could pair him with a Robert Tonyan and know that I'm starting Robert Tonyan off the bat, but I have him for future years, that's a pretty ideal scenario if you don't get a top-end guy. And he's someone that I expect will continue to develop and hang around the league, be a very usable fantasy guy for quite a long time. Someone with an even higher ceiling is Pat Freiermuth, who I have at 16. Like Cole Kmet, he's 22 years old, and his ADP is actually going one spot higher than this at tight end 15. Pat Freiermuth is a tight end prospect, so that should naturally tell you that there is a decent chance he busts. But I thought, first of all, it was surprising Pittsburgh even wanted to go out and take a tight end in the second round. It was not a spot of, you know, severe need. They have Eric Ebron there, but they clearly see a lot of potential out of Freiermuth. And in a year that doesn't have Kyle Pitts, I think there would be a ton more buzz about Freiermuth. So in terms of just pretty high upside, where I think there realistically is a potential that he could be that long-term top five guy, someone like even a Hockenson or a Kittle at the very, very high end, if he hits his absolute ceiling, he's, I think, the best shot to take, clearly, besides Kyle Pitts. And then at 17, I've got Adam Trautman. He is in a absolutely fantastic situation now, especially with Michael Thomas being hurt and apparently very frustrated with the team. Maybe he wants to get out of there. Adam Trautman has less target competition than any other tight end in the league because I don't know who's going to catch the ball besides Kamara in this offense. He has not proven himself at all to this point, but he was a great prospect that I was excited about last year. We've been recommending him for about a year now as someone you need to get cheap before he gets more expensive. And everything's now lined up for him to take that step forward in this offense. By all accounts, the Saints are incredibly high on him, as they should be, in my opinion. They traded a lot of capital last year just so they could go up and get him. So I expect, out of anyone who has not done anything to this point, who has the best opportunity to take a large step forward, Adam Trautman would definitely be my pick. Then at 18, I have Evan Engram, and Evan Engram had an incredibly disappointing season last year, despite the fact that he was targeted like crazy. He was the leader on his team in targets, but you never really wanted to start him for fantasy. A bet on Evan Engram at this point is a bet that that season does not truly show his talent and that he has a lot more to give. And I would not be surprised if that comes from a different team past the 2021 season, so he is more of that upside guy. I'm not confident you can start him this year. I think that is absolutely in his range of outcomes that it changes, but that target competition, as I'm apparently going to talk about all day today, he has a new first round wide receiver to compete with. He has clearly Kenny Golladay, who they brought in, and he's got Saquon Barkley, who was out for almost all of last year. And if all three of those guys are relevant in this offense, that just pushes Evan Engram more and more out of the picture. So it's tough to see him as that target hog player, but it's a bet on talent. It's a bet on long-term athletic upside. And we've seen it in the past where, you know, when he's not dealing with all these drop issues, he can explode and be one of those high-end fantasy producers. I think that is very possibly something that could happen. It just probably won't be in 2021. Then at 19, I have Irv Smith Jr., and this is definitely lower than ADP has him, because ADP has him at tight end 10. So he's only 23 years old, but he's another guy that hasn't really showed me yet that he can make that jump. And that's absolutely possible. It's in his range of outcomes. He's always been a pretty good prospect, but I think ranking him at tight end 10, drafting him with that capital, is just a little bit too rich for me because I'm not confident in the long-term outlook of this passing game. I think they're likely to move on from Kirk Cousins, which I think is likely a mistake. And I don't think Adam Thielen is disappearing in the next couple of years, because Adam Thielen, to me, on tape, still looks like a very, very good wide receiver. And then clearly you have the emergence of Justin Jefferson. Irv Smith could be the number three target, maybe number four behind Dalvin Cook in this offense, but now there are questions towards, is he even the number one tight end? As they're talking up the other guys around him, he deserves to be in this tier amongst these other players, and he's actually the very bottom of this tier. This top 19 is where I have another big tier break, but the upside of Irv Smith is still absolutely there. I'm just not super confident we're going to see it. So when I see him getting drafted at 10, that's definitely too rich for me. If he was being drafted later, you know, as I draft with a tier-based system, I would pretty happily scoop him up if 17 of these other guys were already drafted, because the upside is still really high. After that tier break, we've got some older guys. You've got Zach Ertz, and I've already talked about him a little bit. You're just hoping that last year was an absolute outlier. But honestly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on Zach Ertz. He didn't look good last year, and if it wasn't a one-year crazy outlier, he could easily be dust. It's just that at 30, tight ends that were as good as Zach Ertz has been through his career, they don't usually fall off quite this quickly. Then at 21, you've got Hayden Hurst, who is someone that I think is pretty disrespected, and that makes sense as his ADP is going at 29 and I have him at 21. I understand the hype for Kyle Pitts. I think Kyle Pitts is going to be the tight end one on this team, but I want to hold out that there is an absolute chance that Hurst outperforms him this year, or just in general, is still a very viable tight end, because they don't have a lot else besides Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts. So it's possible that both tight ends are used a good amount, and obviously Calvin Ridley will get his. So I think he's too disrespected. He's only 27 years old. He's a guy that I'm definitely trying to trade for right now, just because I think his value is a little bit too low. But that's likely because the ceiling is absolutely capped, and I think for him to truly become a high-end tight end that we wanted him to be last year, because Kyle Pitts is now on the Falcons, it would probably have to come from him being on another team. Then at 22, I've got Gerald Everett, who is another speculation type guy. The Seahawks for the last few years haven't given us the true tight end one we've always wanted, because they kind of split it up amongst multiple people. But Jacob Hollister is gone now. Greg Olsen, who it's crazy he was even there, is also gone now. They still have Will Disley, but it's absolutely possible that Gerald Everett could step into a pretty high target share in an obviously very good offense. So I'm definitely willing to take the shot on him, especially you're getting into this range. His ADP is at tight end 24. I have him here at tight end 22. He's a worthy shot to go after, especially if you haven't hit on a guy you're really confident in for this year. Take another shot at Gerald Everett. Do that shotgun approach, because I think there's a reasonable chance that he does really surprise in year one on the Seahawks. At 23, I then have Austin Hooper, and Austin Hooper is not someone that's very exciting to me, but again, is someone who I think will probably see a higher target share than people expect. He is still only 26 years old, so he has that upside that he could be a relevant guy for years to come. And I understand that we can project the emergence of someone like Harrison Bryant, maybe Njoku's the more explosive athlete, but Austin Hooper is the guy who will see the highest number of targets in this offense, and the Browns are financially committed to him, so I do expect him to be a very relevant part of this offense, and that probably means, because he's not a very sexy pick, he's undervalued to this point. At 24, you've got Jared Cook, who is 34 years of age, so obviously getting up there, but this is the target for me if none of my other tight end plans in redraft have worked out. Beyond redraft, also in Dynasty, if you've only got those guys that you're not confident about, you've got, you know, you've stacked Adam Troutman and Irv Smith as your only two tight ends so far, just throw a late pick on Jared Cook. Yeah, he's 34, but on this Chargers offense, they've got so few other guys that I'm confident will get high target share. You've got Keenan Allen, you've got Eckler, and you've got the occasional deep bomb to Mike Williams. But I think in the red zone, it's very possible that Jared Cook can eat for just this year. I don't want him as a long-term asset, but if you're looking for a plug-and-play guy, he is my break glass in case of emergency. All my other favorites are gone. I'm fine with Jared Cook. Another guy who I guess has some upside is Anthony Firkser, who I have here at tight end 25. He's going at tight end 26, and he's 26 years old. My issue with Firkser compared to so many of these other guys that have that same sort of opportunity that he does is that Anthony Firkser is a bit old to break out at this point and doesn't have that athleticism. So those are the two things that are pretty big red flags for him being a breakout, but he does absolutely look like he's going to be that tight end one. There was definitely a lot more hype for him in this offense before Julio Jones arrived, and that makes a lot of sense because he looked like he could be the maybe number two or number three target on this offense, but it is clear as long as Julio and AJ Brown are healthy, those guys are going to eat up so much of the target share that there just doesn't seem to be enough left over for someone like Firkser to really emerge. At tight end 26, I've got Blake Jarwin. He is going a little bit earlier at tight end 23, and I think he's just exciting because this offense is incredibly exciting. But the reason why I don't really want to take that shot on the Dallas tight ends is because basically the other weapons around Dak are already so good that yes, I think it's going to be a prolific offense. I think Dak is going to have a crazy good year, throw for a ton of touchdowns, but I think those touchdowns are really going to go to their three wide receivers and probably a decent amount to Zeke and Pollard. So I'm not sure how relevant the tight ends will be in the passing game. Because of the offense, they have that upside built into them. The second guy obviously being Schultz, who we'll talk about later. But I'm taking my shot elsewhere because I just think so many other wide receivers and weapons around Dak are so established and talented that it will be hard for Blake Jarwin to actually emerge as a fantasy relevant guy this year. Pure upside and pure disappointment so far. At 27, I've got OJ Howard. OJ Howard was, I would say, my favorite tight end for a couple of years. Like, he just was someone I loved out of college. Obviously, he broke out a little bit on Tampa Bay and has really dealt with some injuries, not really emerged at any point since those first 2 years in the league. And the hope for OJ Howard is that before he got hurt last year for the umpteenth time, Tom Brady really did start to target it more, was talking up him as being one of those intriguing targets to go after in that offense. But the issue is that was also before Antonio Brown came to town, and we also have to consider the fact that Gronkowski is still a part of this offense too, and clearly Tom Brady's going to give him some targets. So it's hard to see OJ Howard really emerging. I just am looking to see any flashes this year for him to even maintain a roster spot on most of my dynasty teams. And then hopefully he'll find himself on a different offense, or even if he's back on Tampa Bay, it's a slightly different offense where Godwin is likely to leave, Gronkowski can't stay around the league for that much longer. And maybe then in a year or two, he can have a lot more upside that we once saw for OJ Howard. At tight end 28, I have the 24-year-old Dawson Knox, and I think this is a sleeper guy who has a good amount of potential because beyond Stephon Diggs, who will obviously have a high target share, and then probably Cole Beasley, who will soak up a lot out of the slot, this is an offense that will pass for a ton of yards, and the rest of that target competition isn't that great. It's also an offense that isn't going to use the running game nearly as much as so many of the other teams. So Dawson Knox has a good amount of opportunity to establish himself as one of those pass-catching weapons. He hasn't really showed consistency for fantasy to this point, and he definitely doesn't have the draft pedigree. There's also been rumors that this is a potential landing spot for Zach Ertz and all that, so I'm not confident that they are committed to him in the long term, but it is possible for sure that he could emerge and have a breakout season in 2021. At 29, I've got Rob Gronkowski, who is being drafted by me significantly below his ADP. He's 32 years old right now and going as the tight end 20. And the reason why I'm definitely not going for Gronk, even though I do think in redraft leagues he is a viable near tight end 12 type guy. Like, you can use him. He might be one of the 12 starters that will end up on different teams in your drafts. Gronkowski is not someone I'm going to go after because those three wide receivers that Tom Brady has to throw to are so good that I don't think that Gronk will be used that much. You're basically banking on him continuing to score a ton of touchdowns. And he's Gronk, he's huge, it's absolutely possible. I'm just more likely to take my late round shot on someone like Jared Cook just because I think Herbert could throw a very similar amount of yards and touchdowns as Tom Brady, and the talent that Tom Brady has to throw to around Gronk is so much better than the talent that Herbert has to throw to around Jared Cook. So that is why when we're looking at these really late guys, I'm more likely to go with someone like Jared Cook. Getting this late into the rankings, we now hit a point of, you know, pure speculation guys with some upside. You got Harrison Bryant, who I've talked about on this podcast before, at tight end 30. He's going off the board at tight end 39, so I have him a good amount higher than ADP, and that's because I expect that he will have a good opportunity to emerge. David Njoku is not long for the Browns, and Hooper, though somewhat established and will see a decent target share, he doesn't have a lot of upside. Harrison Bryant has a lot of upside. He's a prospect I really liked last year. He did enough in his rookie season, especially considering his low draft capital, that all signs to this point are pointing up. He should have an even greater role this season coming up. And so Harrison Bryant's definitely one of these guys that I'm targeting pretty significantly, even above the rest of the tight ends in this class, not named Freiermuth and, of course, Kyle Pitts. But that's now who we're getting into, because the next guy up at 31 is Brevin Jordan. And I'm actually surprised with how high Brevin Jordan is going. All the way up at tight end 28 in ADP, I have him here at 31, so I'm actually below consensus, even though I feel like I'm pretty high on Brevin Jordan. Any of you who are really, really big fans of the show will maybe note the fact that in our rookie rankings episodes, he was actually not my third highest tight end at the time. I had some other tight ends above Brevin Jordan, namely the guys who went in the third round. But I've done some research since then, and I think it's important to point out, because I learned the hit rate of different tight ends drafted in different rounds, whether it's third round, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh, etc. And the difference between a third round tight end and a fifth round tight end's hit rate is minuscule enough that I made the decision to go back to the players that I thought pre-draft are the best. And in this case, I thought in pre-draft, Brevin Jordan and Pat Freiermuth were almost interchangeable in my rankings. I had a really difficult time picking between the two. Plus, he landed on Houston, who I think clearly does not have a lot of competition around him, even in the tight end room. You've got Jordan Akins, but realistically, I wouldn't be that shocked if Brevin Jordan finds a starting spot on this roster. So there is that opportunity for him to show what he has. That's why, of these tight ends, he's the one I'd first target. And continuing with that theme, staying away from those third round guys that I don't like as much, I then have Kylan Granson, who is going at 41, so someone I'm taking well above consensus here at 32. He's someone I pretty much own everywhere at this point. I think even him at 41 now feels like a month ago or two, he was going even later than that. I've talked about this ad nauseum, but he is handpicked by their head coach in an offense that really likes the tight end, and I think has enough opportunity and especially enough talent that I'm willing to bet on him. He went in the fourth round, but as I was saying earlier, third, fourth, fifth, it's almost negligible. So I am willing to go for Kylan Granson before Trey McKitty or these other guys, because Kylan Granson to me is the best receiving talent. There's some of these guys that are probably a better blocker, maybe more valuable to the team, but when I'm looking at fantasy upside, I think that's what Kylan Granson provides here at tight end 32. Here now comes Trey McKitty and Hunter Long. Trey McKitty first at 33, because one, I did like the tape that he put up in college a little bit better than these other guys, but also Trey McKitty did land on the Chargers, who I've already talked about Jared Cook and the fact that I think there is good opportunity for the tight end in that offense. I'm not really scared of Donald Parham. He's never been a guy I've thought of as being very long for the league, to be honest. I don't think he'll stick around that long. And Trey McKitty has good opportunity as soon as Jared Cook leaves, which I expect will be at the end of this season or maybe the end of next season. And so that opportunity exists that he can emerge, be that number three-ish target for an emerging offensive threat that you have for LA with Justin Herbert. Then Hunter Long, I would say the consensus tight end four out of pre-draft. I assume people like the landing spot or the fact that he was drafted earliest of the round three tight ends. Hunter Long to me is a little bit overrated. He wasn't my favorite guy to watch on tape, but he does have a decent amount of receiving upside. He's not one of these like pure blocking tight ends or anything like that. The issue does exist that they do have Mike Gesicki on this roster in Miami, but the flip side of that is Mike Gesicki to this point does not have that super long-term contract, so it is possible for sure that Gesicki leaves elsewhere. Maybe someone like Will Fuller also leaves, or Devontae Parker, and he could find himself in an advantageous advantageous spot without a huge amount of target competition around him. And that's the upside you're going for with drafting Hunter Long at this point. Next, we've got Noah Gray, who is actually a 7th round pick this year and landed on the Chiefs. And basically, he has risen up to this point in my rankings, tight end 35, because all reports out of Kansas City is that they absolutely love him and he has really impressed. So clearly, this is the offense with Travis Kelce. And not only is Travis Kelce amazing, he's also never injured, it seems. So I do not think that Noah Gray will have an impact soon, unless I suppose Travis Kelce gets hurt. There's a possibility he could step into some sort of similar role, but he's a long-term play, and the fact that there is so much hype about him, it kind of reminds me of maybe like an Adam Troutman, although he doesn't have the draft capital, where the team really loves him and they see that role long-term. So Noah Gray profiles as that big receiving type tight end, and the upside is absolutely there, especially in probably the best offense in football. Continuing with our tight ends, we've got Jacob Harris, who was a 4th round wide receiver converted to tight end for the Los Angeles Rams. I guess he's the tight end 2 or maybe even 3 now behind Tyler Higbee. And Tyler Higbee isn't necessarily locked into being a part of that offense for a long time, but converting from a wide receiver to a tight end is definitely difficult. So do not expect production from him right away. If you're drafting him, it's to throw on your taxi squad to wait a little while, because sure, he has very good upside because he's a great athlete, and clearly he was a wide receiver. So he's definitely more of the receiving tight end mold than a blocking one. But making that switch, learning that new position will likely take time, and he is a tiny bit buried down their depth chart as of now, so he's just not someone you can expect early returns from, although the long-term upside is definitely high. At 37, we finally get into Dalton Schultz, and I just think there is still a possibility that he ends up being higher on the depth chart than Jarwin, and Jarwin's obviously coming off that ACL tear. My money is on Jarwin, but Dalton Schultz definitely looked decent, at least to me, looked pretty similar to Jarwin did when he came in last year. And that isn't necessarily a super high-end tight end, but that's why he's all the way down here at tight end 37. He's only 25 years of age, and if he does step into that same role, he has enough upside to be probably a usable tight end 2 for fantasy if he can secure that tight end 1 role on such a good offense. At 38, we have the final 3rd round tight end in Tommy Tremble, and the reason he's below those other guys is because he is much more of that blocking mold, and on Carolina, we've seen it over the last couple of years that they likely aren't going to use their tight ends that much in the receiving game. There was a lot of hype last year for Ian Thomas, and it definitely never came to be. We'll see about Dan Arnold this year. I definitely don't have my hopes up. He did not make this top 40 list. Tommy Tremble is an absolute just shot in the dark based off of draft capital. Clearly, he was a 3rd round pick, someone that has some intrigue to this team, but I expect he's going to be much more of that blocking type of tight end, and what I saw in college doesn't warrant a super high pick. That being said, I'm totally fine taking a shot on ADP alone. There's crazy high variance, and that's something I'm totally willing to do late in my drafts, but I'm just sooner to take someone like Kylan Granson, who's going a reasonable amount lower than Tommy Tremble is. The final two guys on our list, 39 and 40, are two guys who had some hype once upon a time, and that is David Njoku, former 1st round pick, and Chris Herndon, former very impressive rookie. And neither of these guys have done anything for a bunch of years. They're both players that I think Herndon, you're hoping this offense with a new scheme turns into something and he can emerge. And Njoku, you're hoping that he finally gets away from the Browns and his athletic prowess propels him to be a relevant dynasty tight end. That's it, everyone. That is our top 40 tight ends, and I don't know if I mentioned it to this point. Toby did have a bit of input on these, but they are mostly my rankings. He will definitely be back next week, though. We will have our consensus running back rankings for you guys. I'm excited about that episode. I'm a little nervous, considering how long these two have gone, that it might stretch out a little bit long, but we're obviously right in the heat of the most important time of the year in terms of fantasy. It's draft season. Even in Dynasty, there are tons of startup drafts going on. Everyone's excited for this season coming up. I want to remind you guys all again to follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty, because we do have a lot going on. I'm just going to be reacting to every piece of news. I expect there's going to be something new coming in the tank for you guys soon from us, so I'm definitely excited about that. But yeah, just follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty to keep up with everything we got going on. Thank you guys so much again for listening. I'll talk to you guys again next week. Have a good one, everybody.